Good morning, everyone. My name is Jan Emerson Shea, and I oversee media relations and public affairs activities for the California Hospital Association. It's my pleasure to welcome you all to this morning's audio press conference, where we'll be discussing the severe financial challenges facing California's hospitals as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic crisis, and also talking about a request that we are making to the governor and the state legislature. I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Carmela Coyle, who is the president and CEO of the California Hospital Association. Carmela?
Thanks so much, Jan, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning for this conference. We are in unprecedented times. None of us have really been through anything like this in terms of this COVID virus, whether that's our own health, the incredible death toll that we're experiencing across the United States and in California, the isolation, the economic downturn, and more. And these unprecedented times call for unprecedented actions, and that is the purpose of our request of the governor and this legislature. California's hospitals answered the call. As always, California's hospitals have been and are continuing to be there to treat those who are sickened by the COVID virus. Governor Newsom has and continues to provide outstanding leadership in this crisis, and we have stood shoulder to shoulder with him. California's hospitals were asked by the governor to prepare to surge 40%, that is to have 40% more patients in their hospitals than usual, and then later asked to be able to surge 50%, to be able to accept 50% more patients, to make way for tens of thousands of potential COVID patients all at once. And California's hospitals did just that. We were asked to meet that moment, and we did so, and we did so proudly. We emptied California's hospitals to make way. That meant canceling surgeries and procedures and more. And we did that because it is what hospitals do. It is the right thing, and we were there to care for Californians. But meeting that moment to address the COVID outbreak has really come at a devastating loss and now an increased risk to hospitals. Emergency department visits in the state of California are down 50%. Revenue losses in the aggregate, about 20 to 30% for California's hospitals. For some of our hospitals, far greater, 50 and 60%, especially for some of our smaller, more rural hospitals, who when they cancel even just a handful of procedures, that makes up a large share of their revenue. All of that translates into short-term losses of $10 to $14 billion. That is just the immediate impact of revenue loss. Add to that the expense of being COVID prepared, construction, purchase of equipment, not only medical equipment, ventilators, but personal protective equipment to keep our workers safe, standing up alternate care sites, and all of the rest. And if that's the short-term impact, what we are now looking at is the long-term financial challenge that this presents for hospitals. This immediate and significant loss of revenue really does drain the financial strength of hospitals, not just our immediate liquidity, but the ability of hospitals to borrow, the ability for them to undertake capital projects moving ahead in the future. So that is what leads California's hospitals to seek an immediate lifeline, and that is a lifeline of state financial support. We have asked the governor and this legislature for two things. First of all, for $1 billion before the end of June. June 30 marks the end of the current state budget year, and we are seeking an immediate cash injection to California's hospitals to stabilize those organizations and to make certain that we can stay open and prepared. And second, we are asking this governor and this legislature for a united commitment in the coming budget year that begins July 1 to call for more federal matching aid, for the state to provide some dollars that would then be matched by the federal government. Hospitals have been doing their best. And like other businesses in the economy, right, we've all seen restaurants and movie theaters and retail stores lose revenue as well. But what's been different for hospitals is that while others have been able to turn out the lights and close their businesses, hospitals have remained open, and not just open, but open and hyper-prepared for this COVID crisis. Hospitals now, as we're taking a look at the financial drain, are having to resort to challenging measures, including layoffs, furloughs, asking workers to take paid time off, and more, and that will impact the services that we can provide. That, with this long-term stress on financial hospitals, really puts us in a challenging position. And just to emphasize for our call today, I think there are many out there who are feeling as if this COVID crisis is waning or somehow over. And we are here to tell you that that is not the case. California's hospitals will have to remain prepared for a rise in COVID positivity and a resurgence of the COVID disease. And in fact, right now in the San Diego and Imperial County areas, they are still in the midst of a surge. It is one of the hot spots right now in the state of California. So this immediate cash lifeline is critical, not just to hospitals, but to every Californian. Hospitals are the key to safely reopening California's economy. Unfortunately, we cannot open counties for business. We cannot open the state of California for business unless hospitals have the capacity to care for COVID patients. Hospitals need to be open, available, and staffed. And if hospitals can't remain strong and solvent, we are all in jeopardy. When COVID does resurge, we know it will. As we begin to lift stay-at-home orders, we will begin to mix, and we are clinically expecting more COVID cases, and if it resurges. So California's confidence in daily life can't be restored unless hospitals are funded and stable and operational. And just a reminder, we would rather maintain these jobs in healthcare and in hospitals in particular rather than losing them. Hospitals are the largest private sector employers in many of their communities. Hospitals collectively employ 500,000 people in California and support 1.2 million jobs. So we don't want to get to a point where we're having to furlough workers because that, again, will harm the economy. We can help be a key to that economy starter. And, in fact, we are one of the gates that every county has to get through. We've got to have hospital capacity for the rest of the county to open up. So with that as some background, let me turn the call back over to Jan Emerson Shea and to our guests who have joined us this morning. Jan.
Thanks, Carmela. I'd now like to introduce Larry Lewis, who is the CEO of Pioneers Memorial Healthcare District in Brawley. Pioneers is a 107-bed publicly owned district hospital providing vital medical services to Imperial County. In 2016, the hospital became an affiliate of the Scripps Health Network based in San Diego. Larry?
Hi, thanks, Jan. This is Larry Lewis, and I'd like to just kind of recap some of the transitions that have happened since this began in early March. And at Pioneers, we immediately responded by establishing an incident command team. It's a nationally standardized disaster planning process. And we began coordination with the County Emergency Operations Center. One of the first acts that we did, like many organizations, was to begin staffing five different sites and six different teams to restrict the entrances and screen all of the patients. And then we also spent a lot of time scavenging for shortages in PPEs. So we were responding with prioritizing all of the use of the PPEs to those that were first receivers and those that were directly caring for the patients under investigation for COVID. The shortage, literally there was no testing equipment. That was one of the bigger shortages out there, and limited supplies. It took weeks to begin to identify supplies. And then the prices were going up. We did identify all the shortages. We did secure additional PPEs. We did get ventilators in through the Emergency Operations Center from the state and the county when we were nearing our capacity. The ICU space, we began expanding. We have 8 licensed ICU beds, and we're now capable of expanding to 28 immediately if necessary, and certainly within days. Negative air space, we started with about 25 negative air rooms. We now have the immediate capacity to be at 40, and in alternate sites, we could even expand it up to nearly 70. Ventilator capacity, as I mentioned, it got close once, but with the additional ventilators provided, we now have 18 that are very flexible to use, and another 14 that are capable of providing interim support for ventilator. PPE inventory is better, but it's still sketchy. There's even reports today of N95s running short. We did receive supplies from the EOC and the state stockpile, which helped for quite a while. But we look for that to be a continued concern until the country really reorganizes its resources. After the shelter in, that's when we started to see some significant financial impact. As all hospitals were asked to do, we canceled all elective surgeries, those that could be delayed. We immediately dropped about 65% of our surgeries, which is the high-dollar services we provide. Also, with the shelter in and the concerns and fear and the direction to a community to say, stay at home, there was an immediate decrease in the use of clinics that we own and operate, about 50% overall. And then the ERs saw here about a 40% decrease as people were staying home and protecting themselves. As far as an implication financially, we've seen in April, compared to the prior year, a $5 million drop per month in our net revenues that are collectible. That's almost 50%. Also, there's literally no communication that happens until the very last minute regarding any kind of relief from the federal government through the CARES Act or otherwise. So if those things were to continue, we really would only last about 3 to 5 months at best. We did spend some additional costs. It did cost more to maintain the screeners at those 5 different sites, and the increase in the use of all kinds of cleaning supplies and PPEs, about $500,000 per month more. So literally, I consider it to be living month to month right now. When we see what's available for June, we'll be able to tell whether the clock starts ticking on how many months we have left out there. We have worked with individuals to flex their hours. It's been traumatic for those individuals. Also, it's been difficult for those that are picking up the difference. Everybody's being expected to carry more responsibilities, and it's a stress on everybody. We worry about losing a viable workforce for the future when people don't have enough hours. They seek employment elsewhere, and there's just not a lot out there. But they will look for other opportunities to replace their income. And again, as Carmela had mentioned, that's one of the great fears out there. We did see a great resurgence just about 2 weeks ago, literally over the weekend, where we doubled our number of COVID patients at our facility. And I believe you're going to hear from El Centro also, where they were hit even harder than that. So if the resurgence occurs, we're prepared, but the longer we go with flexed hours, the harder it's going to be to pull people back. And that's where I really worry about the near-term future here. We are focused on keeping cross-trained individuals and the most productive individuals, but trying to keep everyone as close as possible through counseling and support wherever we can. And we all continue to look for alternate sources of funding out there just so we can better assure our workforce where we're going to be and how reliable is this for the future. So with that, let me turn it back over to Jan and go from there.
Thank you very much, Larry. Now I'd like to introduce our final speaker for the morning, Adolf Edward, who is the CEO of El Centro Regional Medical Center in El Centro. El Centro is a 161-bed facility that provides a range of acute care services, including trauma care, to the residents of the Imperial Valley. And the hospital is affiliated with the UC San Diego Healthcare Network. Adolf?
Thank you, Jan, very much. And let me start by first thanking Speaker Nancy Pelosi for what we heard last night as an announcement for a new healthcare heroes bill that's coming our way. I want to also thank Governor Newsom and the work that Carmela and the California Hospital Association is doing to actually support us. As soon as we started to look at the COVID-19 issues, and I'll echo a lot of what Larry has said, we stood up our command center as well with a surge plan, but that was in the middle of February. My military mind went into action very quickly. After 22 and a half years in the Air Force, I really needed to feel comfortable with the direction we're going. So we were able to, when Carmela and the governor asked, can we actually add 40 to 50% to the existing 161-bed hospital, we needed to jump from that number to 184, and now we're at 243 for a surge to ensure that we have really available beds. But more importantly, we go from just talking about what is now known as hospital capacity to capability. That includes the ventilators, that includes the staff, the RNs, the respiratory therapists. So we went in ECRMC from 12 ICU beds to 30 ICU beds. Thank God we had an old ICU that we were not using, but it had all the aspects of an ICU, so we quickly upgraded that. We went from 15 vents to 20 of them, from 15 vents to 47 total vents. 20 of them are complex vents for complicated cases, and 27 others that can even take care of children. We also expanded our negative exam rooms and patient rooms from 50 to 75 with an ability to go up to 100, and that's, of course, all pending added equipment. One of the things that really we started to see fairly early was, you know, we saw a constant uptick. It wasn't as quickly as what happened about, I want to say, 3 weeks ago when we went from 20s to all of a sudden we were seeing 40 and 50 COVID-positive patients. That was a jump. This is why Carmela and Larry were talking about this increase really has taken on a new direction. Today we're down to 42 COVID patients that are in the hospital. Let's talk a little bit about some of the lost revenues and equipment for us. A little over $6 million lost revenues a month. And as Larry pointed out, if we do not see advancements into some of the federal support dollars that are, of course, augmented at the state level, that's going to be very hard to continue that trajectory into the next, not just the fiscal year that starts in July, but the next calendar year that starts in January, if we see another surge that is expected in October and November. We also had to do some investments to bring in PPEs and equipment procurements, and all that has a cost. So we're running close to $2.5 million in added costs. So beside the fact that I'm losing revenues and we had to decant the hospitals so that we can accommodate the new COVID patients, we're also seeing an added expense. With in the future, as you take a look at this continued added expense, if we need N95s and more equipment, that is going to drive our expenditures even higher, and it's going to be very difficult to try to balance. We have 1,100 employees. We're considered the fifth largest employer here in the county. We've got to be really looking at, despite the fact that our staff is resilient, they're hardworking, we really need to kind of continue about how do we care for the caregivers as we go into this new phase that's going to be a little bit more prolonged, because you need them to continue on this resiliency to be able to take care of more patients. And, of course, you know, are we going to have to make decisions based on our financial view, and what does that mean to all of us? We know that all of our service lines, so whether I'm doing urology or orthopedics or GI, all of them have been affected because we had said no to all of the elective procedures. So there's a whole bunch of patients that are waiting to come back to us so that we can actually do some procedures. Thank God these are not urgent, because we still continue on doing urgent procedures in the ORs. We saw a huge drop, as Carmela was mentioning, in our emergency room, down less than 50%, but it's close to the number that Carmela shared with you. All of this adds up to a challenge to continue to operate at the same level. So as you all know, we have a lot of farm workers and a whole bunch of other folks that still float back and forth. There's an equation that's unknown, which is the Mexicali influx and the factor that that will present to us from an epidemiological standpoint. Will we be able to sustain it? Because beside the farm workers, there's also U.S. citizens who are actually flowing back into the valley for care that's not available to them. So we've got to put all these equations together as we think about the reopening and the economic commerce that happens between us and Mexico and the future. I will turn this back over to Jan for next steps.
Thank you, Adolf. And at this point, Kira, we are ready to open the call to questions from the news media.
Certainly. We will now allow questions from the phone lines. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star followed by one. If you'd like to remove that question, press star followed by two. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before using the keypad. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star one. We'll pause here briefly to allow questions to generate in queue. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star one. Our first question comes from the line of Alexandria Rangel with KYMA TV News. You may proceed.
Hi, thank you. My question is for both hospitals, since we are at the border, if they have any number of patients that are being seen from Mexicali, what is like the percentage that we're seeing that are coming over here for those medical needs?
Adolf, if you'd like to speak to that, I know that you have done some work on looking at zip code analysis and the flaws with the data.
Yes. So we know that some of the reported numbers are actually zip codes that may be in the U.S., but the folks that are coming to us in the hospital are U.S. citizens who have a zip code here in the Valley but are living in Mexico. So it's harder to track those because that's what we know. But we know that the Mexicali residents that are Mexicali residents, as in from Mexico, these numbers are very low. What we're seeing are actually U.S. citizens influx from Mexico to us to be seen. And that's why we see this huge uptick that we're seeing right now.
Kiara, I'd like to see if there are any additional questions.
There are currently no additional questions waiting from the phone lines, but again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star one. There are no questions waiting from the phone lines. Oh, we have one pop-up in queue from Tom Brodus with Imperial Valley Press. You may proceed. Tom, your line is open.
Good morning. I had a question about the current surge that we're seeing. I guess we've now hit the mark where we're exceeding even LA County in number of cases through to per 100,000 people. Do we have any sense of what the factors are causing us to be at the top of the list right now?
Tom, this is Larry. While I don't think anybody knows with a certainty why the sudden increase, there have been many factors discussed, including the possibility that this 2 weeks is related to Mother's Day celebrations and people getting back together for that. And other than that, I don't know. Adolf, do you have any other theories that you're operating under?
Tom, thank you for the question. I believe that we've seen a little bit of a deviation from what we've asked the public to help us do, shelter in place. And if you remember, I actually on Facebook every week, twice, I mentioned, please follow the guidelines. What I saw as a behavior out in the community was not in keeping with what we're supposed to be. Secondly, I would just echo something that I've seen myself, and I want to make sure that's emphasized, is that the appropriate wearing of face covering helps us. I can tell you, visiting several of the local grocery stores, there's a lot of folks that go inside, and then all of a sudden they decide to remove their face covering. I think we've got to be very careful. So I hope that they keep in with what's known as social distancing and facial covering and washing hands. If you can add that to an article you put out, that would help us all. We are also worried that Memorial Day is coming up, and I don't know if we've reached the peak yet, because if we do the same things during Memorial Day, then you can count a couple of weeks. And I had actually asked folks to be careful with Mother's Day, and we're seeing that number rise. So I have to add.
Yeah, and let me make one correction. It was Easter that theory was coming up about a couple of weeks ago, so not Mother's Day. That was the impending concern.
Not Easter and Mother's Day, actually, Larry. I'm concerned also about Memorial Day coming up. It's back-to-back-to-back hits, yeah, which adds to the Mexicali effect.
Agreed.
Now, in terms of the hospital's financial situation, obviously this is kind of a national phenomenon right now in terms of what's going on with hospitals, but I mean, it's already documented that Pioneers has been kind of struggling lately anyway with revenue cuts, and I'm not sure what the ECRMC situation is right now, but is this exposing a pre-existing problem even more, or exacerbating it, or what exactly? I mean, is this something that you can recover from based on what we're doing today? I'm trying to get a handle on exactly what the goal is for today's conference.
Well, I think that there were already national trends that see decreases in inpatient activity and whatnot, and those are normal things that we have an opportunity to react to over time. And so, you know, any drops we've had in inpatient revenues, there's been outpatient volumes that have increased. But overall, yeah, Pioneers has been a little bit behind, like 1% or 2%. But now we see that 50% drop off. That is a much more difficult obstacle to overcome.
And it's Carmela, if I can give some statewide perspective to this. Before COVID, we had 38% of California's hospitals who were operating in the red, so operating at a loss. So while everyone has had an impact as a result of emptying hospitals, it becomes a double whammy for organizations that may already have been addressing some financial challenges. And to the request of, or to your question of how does that lead to today's conference and the request, what we are asking is for this financial lifeline because it's not about who economically can remain strong or not. What we need to fight this pandemic is we need every single hospital to be there and to be strong. And because hospital surge capacity is the minimum criteria to allow counties and the rest of the economy to open, it puts us in a very different situation. It's not just we've lost money and we'd like some help. It is because the hospital system has to be strong and ready before the rest of the economy can open.
And Tom, if I can add to Carmela's point, because you live here with us locally, just think about the impact of folks losing their jobs, to what that means to the poverty levels, as we are one of the highest poverty levels, not just in the state of California, but the country, highest levels of unemployment. And nobody wants to be in those lists, but we're there. Think about the long-term impact, because we know that there is a correlation, a direct correlation, between the extent of evidence of what we call the burden of disease. We already have high numbers of asthmatics, diabetics, and I can keep going, and you know those numbers. Now, for the future, if we have a population that's living in poverty, and now we're at this burden of disease, and now we add this COVID thing, really long-term impact is not a good economic stance. So the hospitals must maintain this powerful existence so that we can only not only care for the population, but also advance the economy of the population so we never go backwards.
Well, to maintain that position that you just referred to, do you have a sense of what that would take specifically? I mean, we've talked about funding from the federal government. You talk about $1 billion for, if I understood correctly, for state hospitals by the end of June, but specifically for Pioneers and ECRMC. What do you specifically need to keep paddling?
So I know that Carmela, from a California Hospital Association level, for both Larry and I, as a representative, has a sight picture that we normally discuss about what our needs are. Locally here, if our expenses keep going at this outpacing our revenues, which is what's happening right now, Tom, there are some numbers that we can share with anybody up and down the chain of what I would call the California Hospital Association, the American Hospital Association, going to Congress. There is very detailed analysis that could be done that would tell us what these numbers would be from a perspective. Today, if we share numbers with you, tomorrow those numbers, as you push up a publication out, will probably be wrong. But we understand what it will take from us to continue on to survive longer. And that's really, we are so excited. I'm so happy about what Speaker of the House Pelosi is doing, what the governor is doing, to listen to Carmela speak on our behalf asking for those funds.
And if I may jump in, I think what we're really looking at is, can we make hospitals whole for these losses and take us back to where we were pre-COVID? And it's not just those costs. This will have an ongoing long-term cost as COVID grows and may resurge. I think you all know that there are suggestions we will have a second peak, probably late summer, early fall, if we begin to circulate. And then we get into flu season, where it is expected to peak again, and then into next year until there is a vaccine and time for us to build up immunity. So what we're asking in the immediate short term, if we can be made whole for those losses, that means we can continue on through the next, what will clearly be 2 to 3 years of financial challenge. Some of that is help from the federal government. The first set of funding that was provided by the federal government, some $75 billion to healthcare providers, but only $3 billion came to California. That's why we're now asking the governor for an additional $1 billion for more state money to draw down federal dollars. And as Adolf has just suggested, we are very excited about the Democrats' plan, another $100 billion, again, broadly to healthcare providers, But this, all of these sources will help, but we will need every single one of those sources to allow hospitals to remain open and staffed so that we can continue to provide care. Thanks, Tom, for those questions.
And Kiara, if we could do one final call for media questions.
Yes, ma'am. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. There are currently no additional questions waiting from the phone lines.
Thank you very much, Kiara. And thank all of you for joining us today. We appreciate your interest and attention on this very critical issue. And this concludes our audio press conference. Thank you all. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for attending. This now concludes your conference. Enjoy the rest of your day.